Your host, Katie Conley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Vancouver is still the least affordable city to live in Canada, and Pemberton makes its bid to host Canada's biggest music festival. And on commentary, Phil Caudry discusses the Green Party's chances in the upcoming Vancouver Quadra by-election. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101. But first, with their take on what's happening in and around campus, we turn to our friends at Radio Free UBC.
Hi everyone, welcome to Radio Free UBC. On today's program, we've got a bunch of events that you'll actually want to go to, an interview with Andrea Morgan about the UBC farm, but first, an interview with Krista O'Reilly about the realities of race next week.
Hey, so I'm here with Krista O'Reilly from the Realities of Race Week. Realities of Race is a series of events at UBC on and off campus organized about issues of racism on and off campus. This year's theme is Intersecting Oppressions, Uniting Resistance. So I'm here with Krista O'Reilly. Hi, Krista.
Hi.
So what is Realities of Race? Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, Realities of Race is a series of events that take place mostly at UBC, and we're now in our fifth year, and it's just a series of events to bring awareness to issues about race and racism and also about resistance to racism happening both on our campus and in Vancouver and around the world.
Cool. So what are some of the events that you're having this year?
We have a series of workshops happening. Our theme this year is Intersecting Oppressions and Uniting Resistance, and so we wanted to focus on the ways that different forms of oppression can intersect with racism, and by that we mean forms of oppression that happen at the same time as racism and that kind of act upon each other, so that someone who might be oppressed because of being a woman is going to be oppressed differently if she's a woman of color or a low-income person, things like that. And so our list of workshops this year really reflect that. We have workshops dealing with racism and homophobia. We have workshops dealing with racism and constructions of citizenship. We have several workshops dealing with race and gender, or looking at race, gender, and poverty, race, gender, and religion issues. So just, yeah, a lot of focus on those intersections.
Cool. And like you're also going to be dealing with issues of racism right here at UBC on campus.
Yeah.
Systematic racism in the institution.
Yeah, every year we have a campus community dialogue where people are invited to come and speak about their experiences of racism on this campus and also speak about what can be done. This year our dialogue will be from 4 to 6 on Thursday the 20th, and it'll be held in the First Nations House of Learning.
Great. So if people want to, is there a website or an email that people can get to go to the conference?
Yeah, the website is www.ams.ubc.ca/safety, and the email address is ubc.realities.of.race.week@gmail.com.
Cool. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks.
And next on Radio Free UBC, we've got an interview with Andrea Morgan from the UBC Farm.
So, as you said, we're here with Andrea Morgan from the Student Environment Center. The Student Environment Center, or SEC, is a resource group of the AMS that works to raise awareness about environmental issues and fight for green change at UBC. Lately, the Student Environment Center has been working with the UBC Farm and with Friends of the Farm. So, Andrea, what exactly is the farm, and why is it important to the students and campus at large?
Well, the UBC Farm is a 24-hectare plot of land located on South Campus, and it's important for several reasons. First and foremost, it is a research facility. The Faculty of Land and Food Systems and other faculties, including biology, botany, forestry, all use the land for research. It also is one of the only, actually it is the only urban farm left in Canada, and it's rare in North America, so it provides a lot of opportunities for food security and engaging the community with the food system and agriculture as a whole.
So here at UBC, is the farm in danger at all?
The farm is in danger. It's currently estimated that the land is worth $6 million an acre. Currently, it's lumped in a it's being lumped into a future housing reserve, and its value for the community is being downplayed. Metro Vancouver states that the future of the farm will be analyzed as part of the Vancouver campus plan process. However, the farm is never explicitly mentioned, and on all of the maps, it is actually left off of the maps. So no one's really aware of it. There's a lot of intransparencies in the process. A lot of decisions are being made behind closed doors, and we're just trying to figure out what we can do to save this farm, as it is very, very important. Something I should mention is that there are community gardens there for First Nations people who have a community garden set up there. The Mayan population of Vancouver also has a plot, and it is very important for children community garden as well.
So as students who are concerned, what can we do to help save the farm?
Well, first and foremost, you can join Friends of the Farm. They have meetings in the Student Union Building, room 211, every Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m. You can also email me at dre.sec@gmail.com, or you can attend the Student Environment Center meetings weekly. They are on Tuesdays at 12:30 p.m. in the Student Resource Space, which is in sub 245.
All right, thank you very much for helping us raise this issue this week.
Thanks, Kalina and Andrea. So for some event announcements, we've got Realities of Race next week being held at various locations all across campus.
We also have Responsible Consumption Week at UBC. To find out, visit www.ubc-rcw.org.
And Cinema Politica is back. It's a weekly SDF, Students for a Democratic Society, film screening happening in the Norm Theater. Next week's screening will be on Monday, March 17th at 3 p.m., and it's showing King Korn in collaboration with Responsible Consumption Week.
And Global Action World Against War, events marking the 5th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. It's an anti-war rally on March 15th, Saturday noon at the Vancouver Art Gallery, which is exactly at Georgia Street and Hornby Street. The event's organized by StopWar.ca and Canadians Against War.
And I believe there's going to be some Students for Democratic Society speakers speaking at the event. We're also on Sunday, March 16th, we have an event called Building Movements Against War with Speaker Barry Shepherd at the SFU Harbor Center at 515 West Hastings Street.
Health Workers Call for Peace and Justice is a community forum being held on Wednesday, March 12th, so it already happened, so you can't go.
But something that you can go to is next Friday, March 21st at 1 p.m., there's the Community March Against Racism. Meet at Clark Park on Commercial Drive and 14th, and the event is being organized by No One Is Illegal. Thank you to Kalina, Andrea, Nathan, and Krista for coming out for this week's Radio Free UBC. We'll see you next week.
And Steph.
Thanks very much to Radio Free UBC for their piece. Always a delight to have you guys in. Have a good weekend. And our very own producer, Megan Turcato, had the chance to interview Yoji Cummings, a student who's part of a local group who's taking to the streets to raise awareness about homelessness in Vancouver.
I'm here with Yoji Cummings, a student at UBC and a participant in the 5 Days of Homelessness project. And first of all, Yoji, can you tell us a little bit about what is the 5 Days of Homelessness project for those that don't know?
Okay. Well, 5 Days is a charity campaign aimed at raising awareness for homelessness. And we are currently accepting donations to go to Covenant House. It's a local Vancouver charity that helps homeless youth that have been kicked out or have been disowned to get back onto their feet.
And can you tell me a little bit about what you guys were doing to raise money for homelessness?
Well, we got a lot of corporate sponsors from people like Gold's Gym and Foot Solutions. We've also, we've bussed for our change. We've gone, have had donation tables. We've gone to our classmates and asked for change, and we've raised over $10,000 now.
So the idea is these companies are sponsoring you to sleep outside for 5 nights.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we've slept for 5 nights underneath the bookstore cover. It's been cold, and we're not allowed to shower. All our food has to be donated to us. We're not allowed to use any money, and we're not allowed to change our clothes.
So is this designed to approximate the living situation of an actual homeless person?
No, that's not what we're going at exactly. We're not trying to we're not saying that this is homelessness. It's not nearly as close as it is. We're just trying to get a taste of what it's like to live homeless.
And how many UBC students participated in the project?
Including myself, we've had 8 students participating in this drive.
And I understand the 5 Days Project is a nationwide program. What other universities are participating?
Oh yeah, it's actually originally started in the University of Alberta. Their business faculty started it 4 years ago. And since then, it's been expanded to here at UBC. It's in Edmonton, various universities in Ontario, and universities in Quebec. So, you know, we've had it really, really nice here. And over in Montreal, it's minus 20. I'm sure they just had a blizzard over there. So we've had the easy side of things. You know, my heart goes out to those out in Montreal.
And so what did participating in the 5 Days Project teach you about the realities of being homeless?
Well, I've learned a number of things. First, I'd have to say I've really appreciated the support of the community and my friends. I know I couldn't have done it without them. Secondly, I know when I see a homeless person on the street, I definitely won't look at it in the same way that I used to. It's a lot harder than it seems. I've only had a taste of it, a fraction of the experience. But I can tell you when you're sleeping out on the streets there at night and it's raining and your sleeping bag is wet, it can get cold.
So you've already spoken to this a little bit, but can you give us an idea of what the challenges are of being homeless that you've got a taste of through participating in this project?
The challenge is finding food, carrying your life on your back. It's the cold, it's not even that cold here, but when your sleeping bag gets wet and you don't have a mattress to sleep on and you're sleeping on cardboard, it's hard to sleep and you wake up sore and with a crooked neck and it's awkward.
So did you have to pack up all your belongings with you every day and take them to class with you?
Oh yeah. Sleeping bag, pillow, books, notes, in my case, my guitar, my camera. And, just lug it around campus and, you go to class, you gotta unload, and then everyone kind of looks at you a little peculiarly, and then, same deal when you leave. It's 5, it's a big job to just get yourself ready to leave in the morning.
So what were the challenges for you guys in terms of finding food? Would random UBC students just come up and donate to you guys because they knew that you were participating in the 5 Days Project?
Actually, yeah, once the word got out about what we were doing, we got a huge amount of support. We wouldn't have been able to do it without the community and our friends. We've just had random acts of kindness. It far exceeded my expectations. I was really amazed by the kind of support we got.
Was your first night out there a pretty barren night in terms of people not knowing what you were doing and not really being willing to donate?
The first night, I'll admit, I got pretty hungry. And for a second there, I thought, oh man, this is going to be really, really tough. But, right in the nick of the time, some people came around, saw what we were doing, and got us some McDonald's. So, pretty happy with that.
So did all 8 people who started the project stick it out for the whole week, or were there some people who, given the challenges of being homelessness, felt they wanted to go back to their warm beds?
Oh, no, we were a pretty close-knit group there, so we all had this goal in mind, and we for sure stuck it out.
So if people still haven't donated and want to do so, where can they donate?
You can go to www.5days.ca/Vancouver. We're still accepting donations, and any donation, a penny or a dollar, is great.
And what kind of reactions did you get from people who maybe didn't know what you were doing or hadn't heard of the 5 Days Project?
It's a funny story, actually. I got mixed reactions. Some people didn't know what I was doing, so they kind of gave me a little bit of a snarl. But there's another friend of mine, and He didn't get through the challenge as well as I did, and he was a bit unhygienic, I guess you could say. And he was on the street in UBC, and he actually waved to one of his friends, and she didn't recognize him. And he yelled louder, and then a security guard saw this and said, "Hey, buddy, get off campus. Like we don't want any of this here." Of course, he solved the situation in 5 minutes or so, but there was some hostility, I'm sure, around the campus.
So you're saying your friend wasn't quite as hygienic as you've been through this process, and I was wondering if you have any strategies of how you got through the project in a more hygienic way. Did you use a sub bathroom or something?
Brushing your teeth in the morning? Yeah, well, I won't lie. I did brush my teeth. You know, I love my teeth. yeah, you know, I'd go into my faculty building and, you know, just walk up to the fourth floor, walk into the washroom and start washing my face and just trying to keep clean in general and hope I don't get into, you know, people's way too much and smell up the whole entire room.
So no one in your classes ever gave you weird vibes for not washing or anything?
Actually, no, because my my building and my faculty, once they found out that we were doing this, so they got right behind us and supported us 110% as commerce faculty. So yeah, they were really amazing with the kind of support that they showed us.
Thank you very much for coming in and telling us a little bit about the 5 days project and what it was like to be temporarily homeless.
Okay, thank you.
And thanks to Megan for her piece. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on local and provincial news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips. Yeah.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:20. Now, with a look at local and provincial news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Tracy Fuller, Marie Bernard, and Leanne Yu.
The Vancouver Police Department issued a warning yesterday asking women who go walking or choose to run alone after dark to pay attention to their surroundings. The warning comes on the heels of a bold sexual assault that occurred Wednesday evening just east of the UBC campus. The single woman, who had just gotten off a TransLink bus near the intersection of King Edward and Quesnel Drive, was wearing headphones when the attack occurred. Because the victim was distracted, the attacker was able to sneak up on her from behind. Police are warning all Vancouver women to keep alert when alone in public. When walking after dark, do not block your ears with headphone noise or limit your awareness by talking on the telephone. Such actions make you an easy target for criminals. Police are also urging citizens to call 911 anytime they spot someone or something suspicious. Reporting can help solve crimes and stop problems before they start.
And Vancouver is still the least affordable place in Canada to live, according to a report by Royal Bank. According to the RBC, a condo is the cheapest option for Vancouverites, but it still costs on average about 30% of a household's pre-tax income. Other forms of housing are even more expensive. A detached bungalow costs about 68.5% of a household's pre-tax income, and a townhouse costs about 52%. The bank blames rising house prices and a strong economy on Vancouver's low house affordability. There is some good news for the future, though. RBC does predict that housing price increases will slow down in the next year.
Like swimming in the nude? If you have a hankering for swimming and frolicking au naturel, you might want to take a trip down to Surrey's Newton Wave Pool. The nudie group, Skinny Dipper Services, was banned from the pool in 2003 after a secret council vote. They've been fighting since then to get their naked bodies back in the pool. The city and the swimmers have now come to an agreement as of Thursday. Last November, the Skinny Dippers won a BC Supreme Court case, but they weren't allowed to do the full Monty at Newton Wave Pool until yesterday's negotiations. The Skinny Dipping Swimming Club has bi-weekly swims in Vancouver and now in Surrey. Membership is mandatory to attend the nude swims. For more information, visit www.club.skinnydipper.ca.
And the upcoming 2010 Olympics has stirred significant controversy over rising construction costs on Olympic venues. But VanOck has announced that they're actually operating in the black. VanOck says that in the last quarter, costs rose $17 million, but that sponsorships and revenue also rose, leaving the organization $56.5 million ahead, despite also hiring 57 new employees. Total sponsorship revenues were $709 million, an amount that was higher than expected. The total target amount for sponsorship of the Olympics is $760 million. The city of Pemberton, north of Whistler, is making its bid to host the next big music festival. The first annual Pemberton Music Festival, taking place between July 25th and July 27th, will feature acts including Coldplay, Jay-Z, The Tragically Hip, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Sam Roberts. Pemberton organizers hope that the festival will come to rival other festivals like Coachella, Sasquatch, and Bonnaroo. Tickets go on sale March 28th and cost $240 for the entire weekend.
British Columbia's electoral map is about to look a little different. After a long series of discussions, the Liberal and NDP parties agreed to include six new ridings in Victoria, the Lower Mainland, and Kelowna. The two interior ridings, which were on the chopping block, will not be axed after all. On the issue of those interior ridings, Liberal House Leader Mike DeJong commented that it would be unfair to have a single representative for an area the size of France. This means that the new six ridings will add six more seats to the provincial legislature. NDP House Leader Mike Farnsworth says that the decision meets the requirements of the Electoral Boundaries Commission. We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on national and international news. Thanks to Tracy for that emphatic read, and thanks to Marie for the skinny dipping story. And stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Want to see your film up on the big screen?
The Vancouver Student Film Festival is back to showcase the best of BC's post-secondary student and alumni film and video makers on May 24th.
The film festival is looking for entries of all genres, from student or graduate filmmakers within the last 3 years. Films received by March 1st are only $10 and $20 until April 19th.
Only 2 weeks left before the early entry deadline. For entry rules and to submit online, please visit www.vsff.com.
Let the cartoons begin!
CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM presents our second That DJ competition at the Pit, Thursday, April 3rd, 2008.
CITR's second That DJ competition is looking for the most versatile party DJ in Vancouver.
It's quite simple. Eight DJs play 15-minute sets each, with a minimum of three genres of music to keep the party rocking.
There are no restrictions on what audio sources or what music style That DJ chooses to use. DJs must bring their own music and needle and provide their own transportation. The equipment provided will be properly functioning, professional quality equipment.
Interested? Send your demo to The DJ Competition, CITR Radio, 233-6138 Sub Boulevard,
Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
Along with your full name, email address, mailing address, home or cell phone, your musical style, and audio sources used.
MySpace submissions are also accepted. For more information, please visit our website at www.citr.ca or email thatdjcompetition2008, all one word, at gmail.com.
And we're back. It's 5:27 and the news continues on CITR. Now on to national news with more on what's happening across the country. Here are reporters Carrie Baptist and Leanne Yu.
A new government bill proposes sweeping changes to Canada's immigration policy, which would limit the number of new applicants. The bill is designed to clear the backlog of 800,000 potential immigrants who are currently languishing on waitlists. Under the current rules, it takes 3 to 6 years for an immigration application to be looked at. Specific measures in the bill would allow the immigration minister to reject an applicant already deemed admissible by immigration officers. The new proposal would give the minister the power to set limits on what categories of immigrants can have their applications processed in a given year. Liberal MP David McGuinty criticized the new bill, calling it short-sighted and misguided. NDP MP Olivia Chow agreed, questioning why the government would try to limit immigration at a time when Canada desperately needs more workers.
Liberal head Stéphane Dion is standing firm on his refusal to apologize for the allegations made against Prime Minister Stephen Harper and the PM's knowledge of the Cadman affair. This despite Harper slamming a $2.5 million libel suit against the Liberal Party. Dion accuses Harper of playing games and insists on the truth from the Prime Minister. In the center of the controversy is a tape recording that supposedly contains evidence of Harper's awareness of a bribe offered to the late MP Chuck Cadman in 2005. Dion accuses Harper of pretending the tape has been doctored and challenges him to produce a full version of the recording. Dion also recommends Harper tell the public what part of the conversation is missing. This may be the first time a prime minister has sued the official opposition. The statement accuses the Liberals of, quote, reckless indifference to the truth, end quote, and maliciously repeating unreasonable allegations based on a partial tape and an unproved excerpt from an unpublished book.
Judge John Gomery is warning against the growing trend of the centralization of power in Canadian government, a move that is putting more control in the hands of Stephen Harper's inner circle within the Prime Minister's office and less in the hands of Canadian democracy. One-time head of the Gomery Inquiry, he appeared in Ottawa yesterday before the House of Commons Estimate Committee to discuss the implementation of his recommendations following the sponsorship scandal. Gomery cautioned that his political staff in the Prime Minister's office are not elected, yet, quote, have the ear of the most important and powerful person in the Canadian government, end quote. He went on to say that this centralization is the type of political interference which leads directly to the sponsorship program. The Conservatives have failed to acknowledge the report, with Prime Minister Stephen Harper saying that many of Gomery's recommendations to reverse the centralization trend have already been implemented.
And in international news, a growing number of Iraqi refugees heading to Syria may spill over into the European Union. With more on that, we turn to our friends from Free Speech Radio News.
The war in Iraq has caused an estimated 2.5 million Iraqis to flee their homeland. 1.5 million of those refugees are now living in Syria. The head of the United Nations Refugee Agency said the Iraqis in Syria are running out of money and options. The UN says if the international community doesn't provide enough relief support, many Iraqi refugees could try to move to European Union nations. Zach Badarf has more from Damascus.
In the Damascus neighborhood of Sit Zainab, Iraqis are everywhere. The main street is even called Iraqi Street. In one of the shops selling Iraqi flags and other souvenirs, 20-year-old Mohammed Abdurraza watches an Al Jazeera television report about his homeland, Iraq. He fled to Syria in late January after his brother was killed by Shia militants. He said, unlike in Iraq, the Sunnis and Shias are like brothers here in Syria. It's his dream to go to Europe, maybe Sweden or Denmark.
I want to move to Europe so I can get a good job to support my family. It's tough here in Syria, and even worse in Iraq, so I want to make a new life in Europe.
Abdurrazzaq lives in Damascus with his wife, son, parents, and brother. The Baghdad native said the UN gives his family food each month, but nothing more. He said the international community should help Syria to provide more aid to the refugees here. He's not employed in Syria, but is looking for work. Officially, Iraqis can't work, but many do. Outside the UN Refugee Agency headquarters in Damascus, Sirgan Tumasaya, a 60-year-old Iraqi, said he's desperate to leave Syria for another country, any country.
I like Syria, but I can't work here, so I want to go somewhere else.
Peter Harling, a Damascus-based analyst with the International Crisis Group, says job opportunities for refugees here are few.
Obviously, many hesitate at the idea of going back to Iraq, not being quite sure that the situation there is sustainable. And also, they worry at the fact that it might be far more difficult for them to come back to Syria now that Syria has closed its border with Iraq.
Syria still lets in about 1,000 Iraqis every day. Before October, when Iraqis could enter without a visa, more than 4,000 entered the country daily. The Damascus government says it won't force Iraqis to return home. The UN High Commission of Refugees is calling on the international community to increase food relief and other assistance for Iraqi refugees living in Syria, Jordan, and elsewhere in the region.
We have funding now for our financial program, our food assistance program, but that's running out, and by June we'll be facing significant problems.
Sibella Wilkes is the regional public information officer for the United Nations in Damascus. She says about 40% of Iraqis are living off their savings, and for many, the situation has become desperate.
The fact is, for many refugees, as they're running out of savings, the natural instinct is if they can't continue to live here, either their option is that they try and go back to Iraq, and many are telling us they can't do that, or they go and try and find another place to live where they can make ends meet. Now, we think it's extremely important to meet their needs here.
A UN poll of Iraqis who are returning home from Syria found about half were leaving because they couldn't afford to stay, while just 14% said they were going home because of improved security. Many war-displaced Iraqis are seeking refuge in the EU. Last year, 20,000 went to Sweden, which has accepted 90% of its applicants, while the United Kingdom, a coalition partner in Iraq, rejected about 800 of 1,100 Iraqi asylum seekers last year. The International Crisis Group's Peter Harling says Europe is backing off from the Iraqi refugees while playing up this relative calm in Iraq to say there's no crisis. He said the big ambition of many Iraqis is to move to Europe.
But I think Europe has closed its doors, so you still have obviously some channels, illegal channels, but that's extremely costly. I think per person it can go up to $15,000 for a trip, with absolutely no guarantee that their status as refugees in Europe will be recognized.
The UN Sibella Wilkes says there are people willing to take advantage of Iraqi refugees' desperation.
In many cases, there are also scams going on in which people will promise to help a refugee smuggle themselves somewhere into Europe, and all that happens is they lose tens of thousands of dollars and never go anywhere.
Peter Harling says political and bureaucratic issues make the legal channels for refugee resettlement in Europe or the U.S. painfully slow.
The problem here is that Syria doesn't have very good relations with the U.S. In fact, it has very bad relations with the U.S., and there's been a tendency on part of both the U.S. and the host country to blur the lines between the political crisis and the humanitarian one.
Although Harling says the United States has made a commitment to progressively increase its efforts, in 2006, the U.S. admitted just over 200 Iraqi refugees. In Damascus, I'm Zach Badorf for Free Speech Radio News.
And thanks to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. It's now time for another break here on News 101, but stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
Better Environmentally Sound Transportation is proud to offer bike valet parking to events in Metro Vancouver. Inspired by the widely successful valet parking in San Francisco, 2 years ago, Best began running bike valet in Vancouver with great results. Concertgoers in Deer Lake Park, fans of the Vancouver Canadiens, and families spending a day at community events have had their bicycles parked conveniently and stored safely while they enjoyed themselves worry-free. This year, Best is expanding bike valet to serve more events, park more bikes, and make traveling on two wheels throughout Metro Vancouver even easier. Contact Best at 604-669-2860 or CAM at best.bc.ca for more information about volunteering, sponsorship opportunities, and booking bike valet for your event.
Wake up and see the realities of race. The purpose of Realities of Race is to heighten awareness of racism on the global as well as local fronts, and to encourage members of our university community to take action for positive change. Realities of Race Week is happening from the 17th to the 20th of March. The theme for this year's series of events is Intersecting Oppressions, Uniting Resistance. Great events are happening all week, including the Community Dialogue from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, March 20th.
If you're interested in volunteering for Realities of Race Week, please call 604-822-9319. Or, for further information, please visit the website at www.ams.ubc.ca.
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week, Phil Caudry evaluates the Green Party's chances in Monday's Vancouver Quadra by-election and whether or not they are an irrelevant force in Canadian politics.
For the upcoming Vancouver Quadra by-election on Monday, a question that comes to mind for me is the Green Party of Canada an irrelevant force in Canadian politics? The jury is still out, but for all intents and purposes, for me, the facts point to yes. Barring a major upset, Joyce Murray, the Liberal candidate, will become Vancouver Quadra's next MP. Her Conservative opponent, Deborah Meredith, will be the runner-up by a margin of at least 10 percentage points. So the real race to watch is for the bronze medal between the NDP and the Greens. The NDP is running a sacrificial lamb in student Rebecca Code, and the Greens are running an enthusiastic technology consultant in Dan Grice. However, like Code, Grice is not only green in policy, but also green in experience. So the race for third place is considered open. The Kitsilano Gucci socialist vote is up for grabs, and trust me, both parties need to secure third place for one reason, to not be deemed as Canada's irrelevant left-wing party. Even with the environment as the biggest issue in voters' minds, the Greens have yet to elect an MP or even make a dent in public opinion polls. With Vancouver Quadra as being one of the wealthiest ridings in Canada, and with a saturation of Prius-driving, Lululemon-wearing, and yoga-practicing voters, this is a serious test of electability. If the Greens can drum up support and squeak into third place, regardless of how distant from second, they can claim a moral victory. The Greens can say Quadra voters heard the call and have designated the Greens as Canada's third party. They will predict more measurable improvements across Canada to follow. But with any test, there are risks. For the Greens, it is to follow the same pattern of having unrealistically high expectations and falling terribly short. While Canadians feel the Greens address environmental concerns better than any other major Canadian party, Canadians are concerned with a multiplicity of issues and tend not to be driven by a singular issue. This explains why Paul Martin's government survived Gomery in 2004 but not in 2006. In 2006, Liberal corruption was compounded by their inability to govern in a minority setting. In 2004, the singular issue of corruption was unable to bring them down. The Greens are simply unable to appeal to voters beyond the issue of the environment. On their website, greenparty.ca, six principles are outlined, including ecological wisdom, non-violence, social justice, sustainability, participatory democracy, and respect for diversity. However, these principles are not very well fleshed out and are vaguely described in bullet point format. If a party is unable to state what they want to get done and how they are going to do it, why should voters trust them? As a result, other Canadian parties have co-opted their positions, as seen in this race. The Liberal candidate Joyce Murray is considered an ardent environmentalist, and she should be able to bleed votes away from the Green Party. Over the past month, I have immensely taken note of the election signs on lawns throughout the riding. The Conservatives have the most from what I've seen, which I believe has to do with their frustrated core supporters publicly venting their frustrations at federal elections in the riding being a formality for Liberal candidates. The NDP has a presence similar to 2006, and the Liberals have a solid yet modest showing as usual. However, I have only spotted one green sign in the riding. for a riding that is supposed to be a stepping stone for the Greens to legitimize their place in Canadian federal politics, this is appalling. If anything, it seems people are less excited about the Greens than before. Expect the Greens to place a distant fourth place on Monday, and don't expect them to do much better across Canada during the general election, whenever that'll be. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thanks for that, Phil. Our producer, Megan Turcotto, is here now with a look at our oddity of the week. And Megan, we have another somewhat local oddity about the perks of being an endangered species.
Yes, Katie. Well, if you've ever wanted to fly to an exotic locale in the lap of luxury, perhaps you should have been born a frog. A group of frogs were shipped from the Toronto Zoo to the Vancouver Aquarium on a luxury corporate jet, courtesy of the owners of London Air Service, who is a longtime friend of the Vancouver Aquarium. The Lucky Leapers are endangered Panamanian golden frogs, and a five-hour commercial flight would have put their fragile lives at risk, so the Vancouver Aquarium called in a favor, and now the frogs are safe and secure here in Vancouver. The frogs were relocated on the Leap Day, February 29th, so they can be bred in captivity in hopes of saving the species. So, I guess, donations save frogs.
I'm just marveling at the fact that these frogs fly better than the rest of us. I know they're an endangered species, and I do love animals, don't get me wrong, but...
They're delicate, Katie.
How can I fault them for flying first class on London Air Service?
I don't think you can. There's nothing to say here. Save the frogs by flying them first class.
I guess
that's what it takes these days.
I wonder.
Species.
I guess, London Air Service, it sounds pretty pricey, don't you think?
I guess so. I don't know if they're going to start, like, flying polar bears to other polar bears so they can mate and, like, save them that way.
I guess they have to take these precautions because, I mean, I don't know if I'm breaking national airline secret policy, but I remember hearing a story once about a team of polo horses being flown up from Brazil in the cargo container. I think they were being shipped to Canada. I'm not sure why. And the horses froze to death because of the high altitudes. Them being in the cargo container, it's not very warm. It killed a whole team of polo horses, so obviously they figured out that they need to take better care of animals and they're shipping them long distances.
I guess it makes you wonder what is going on when you put your dogs or cats underneath, too. Like, is that really safe for them? So,
good question. Does being an endangered species give them any more privileges than your pet?
Apparently it does.
Well, it's a little sad, but thank you, Megan, for that lovely oddity. And it's break time again, but coming up next, we have the Arts Report with Katie Fitzpatrick. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
We've all heard about sweatshops. They're shops that employ workers at low wages, for long hours, and under very poor conditions.
Oxfam UBC is bringing awareness to the cause by holding the No Sweat Fashion Show. The main aim of the fashion show is to create awareness of the conditions in sweatshops of various clothing companies around the world. The information provided by the MCs will be about the negative aspects of sweatshops, along with the improvements made by certain companies for their workers.
The event is happening on March 19th from 12 to 1 p.m. inside the Student Union Building at UBC, near Starbucks. For more information, please email ubc.oxfam@gmail.com.
The Science Undergraduate Society is presenting Red Carpet, a live human labor auction and fashion show fundraiser for the charity Free the Children.
Red Carpet will feature dazzling fashion from 8 local designers. 19 popular students from groups across campus will be auctioning off their services in a live auction. As well, the event will have student performances in a fantastic talent show. And of course, food and great prizes, including grand prizes of gaming systems.
Red Carpet is being held Wednesday, March 19th from 5:30 until 8 p.m. at the Ladder Center at UBC. Entrance fee is by donation. Join us for a spectacular evening of glamour and fun.
See the Facebook group for more details or email pro.sus@gmail.com.
All you people care about is readers.
and making money off of her. She's a human! Leave Brittany alone!
If you don't want to miss your favorite CITR show because it makes fun of the spiel, then you've got nothing to worry about. Now you can get all of the CITR 101.9 FM radio shows off our website and download them straight onto your computer or MP3 players. Just visit www.citr.ca/podcast and dive into a pool of all of the past radio shows, such as...
Because all you people want is more, 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 more! Leave her alone!
All to your little heart's desire.
And welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:47 and time to turn things over to the other Katie, Katie Fitzpatrick, for a look at the arts.
Hello and welcome to your 5-Minute Arts Beat here on News 101. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, there's a lot of events going on in the city right now. The big news, of course, is going on in dance, and that's with the Vancouver International Dance Festival. That's featuring more than 20 local, national, and international dance companies in main stage, cabaret, and late-night performances. Performers include flamenco fusion dancer Ana Arroyo from Spain, Taika Toro Kudo from Japan, the Toronto Dance Theatre, Gang Gangrass from Quebec, Kaha Wee Dance from Toronto, as well as local dance companies such as Company Araska and Kokoro Dance. That's till March 29, 2008 at various Vancouver venues. You can find all the information about the specific shows at www.vidf.ca, and you can catch some of the reviews of those in the Georgia Strait as well. There's also some events going on in Vancouver in theater right now. One of them is 2 Degrees of Fear and Desire. Headlines Theater presents an interactive theater event facilitated by David Diamond that includes audience member stories about altering their own environmentally unfriendly behavior. That's till March 16th at various venues around Vancouver. If you Google Headlines Theater, 2 Degrees of Fear and Desire, you can find the information about which cafe that's going to be at for the next couple days that it's running. So get a chance to hear some stories about how people went green and how you can do so yourself as well. Also going on in theater is Bombay Black. In association with Cahoots Theater Project and Night Swimming Theater, the Art School Theater Company presents Anoush Irani's magic realist drama about a Bombay dancer who casts an erotic spell over her clientele. That's till March 15th, tomorrow night, at the Granville Island Stage on Johnson. Going on in my hometown of Richmond at the Gateway Theater is My Chernobyl, the world premiere of Aaron Puszkowski's comedy starring Andrew McNee and Alan Morgan. That is also till tomorrow night, March 15th, once again at the Gateway Theater. Going on at the Havana, the great restaurant, gallery, and theater there on Commercial Drive, is Red Light Winter. It's Adam Raff's off-Broadway study in melancholic triangulation and obsession dash. Once again, that's till March 22nd. Also going on right now is the Queerly Canadian Theater Series. Repertory performances of Brad Fraser's Poor Superman, directed by David C. Jones, and Michael Tremblay's Susanna, directed by Jack Peterson. You can find more information at www.savingmetropolis.com. That's till March 16th, Sunday, at the Waterfront Theatre on Granville Island. Also going on at the Waterfront Theatre as part of this is The Gay Mafia, improvised comedy directed by David C. Jones and featuring Pierce Visor and various members of the Bob Lawlaw comedy queer comedy troupe. That is March 14th and 15th at 10:30 p.m. at the Waterfront Theatre there on Granville Island. Also going on with the Arts Club is Rabbit Hole. It's David Lindsay's Avera's play that explores the possibility of finding hope even in the darkest hour. That is going on for a while, till April 13th, and once again, that's through the Arts Club, that one at the Stanley Theatre on Granville. Finally, at Performance Works on Cartwright, also on Granville Island, there's Tremors. Rumble's Festival of Emerging Arts presents performances of Atomic Vaudeville's Legoland till March 22nd, Zupa Circus Theatre's Penny Dreadville, March 25th to 29th, and Roughhouse's Tiny Apocalypse, April 1st to 5th. You can find more information about all these plays at www.rumble.org. And once again, that's at Performance Works on Granville Island till April 5th. Going on in music, there's a few events. One that's on tonight at 8 p.m. is the West Coast Symphony, performing Franz Joseph Haydn's The Creation with principal conductor Bouillard Lepay. That is at the Christ Church Cathedral on Burrard tonight. Also on in music tomorrow night is Concentrate. The Turning Point Ensemble and Vancouver 2010 Cultural Olympiad present the work of BC composers, featuring pieces by Jocelyn Morlock, John Corson, Bradshaw Pack, Marcus Godard, Owen Underhill, and Rudolf Komoros. That is till March 15th at 8 p.m. At the Ryerson United Church. Going on to literary events, there's a few things as well. One is Crick Crack, stories by Philomena Jordan and Patty Graver, as well as others. March 16th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Trinity St. Mark's Church. Now, if you're interested in seeing a movie this week, there's a few things going on at Fifth Avenue Theaters there. First of all, the Shield's showing some of the Oscar nods, Juno, There Will Be Blood, and No Country for Old Men. So if you'd still like to catch up on that, you can go check those out. They're also showing The Counterfeiters, the Foreign Academy Award winner, which I reviewed on my show last week. Thought it was absolutely fantastic. They're also showing Caramel and City of Men, the follow-up of the film City of God about the Rio de Janeiro slums, which is a really great film, so hopefully this one is as well. And finally, on Tuesday, March 18th only, they're showing Rock, Paper, Scissors, Way of the Tosser. The Way of the Tosser is a hilarious comedy feature that shines a spotlight on the current fast-growing obsession with competitive rock, paper, scissors. The BBC called it a quirky comedy destined to be a cult classic, a moment of genius. And I believe they're also showing it at the Norman Theatre here at UBC, so that may be something that you want to check out. Once again, for your Arts Beat, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick.
Thanks, Katie. It's now 5:51 and time for Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Tyler Noble. Tyler?
All right. Thank you, Katie. Yes, it's actually been a bit of a weird feeling being in here live for a Friday sports segment. I feel very lost right now.
I know. It feels like old times, but radically new at the same time. Yeah. I don't know what to think.
Well, the season's winding down, and so we won't be having the sports broadcast following the news at 5:45 like we've had throughout the season. So Thunderbird Eye on Sports will be back on News 101, at least for the next little while here on Fridays. Great. All right, let's get right into it. For the fifth time in 6 years, the UBC Thunderbirds men's basketball team has come up short at the CIS National Championships. UBC's quest for a national title ended with an 83-78 quarterfinal loss to the Brock University Badgers today in Ottawa. It is the third straight year the Birds have been bounced in their first game at the Nationals. They arrived in Ottawa with 2 weeks of rest and an impressive 9-game winning streak to end the season, which included home playoff sweeps of the Fraser Valley Cascades and Victoria Vikes, as well as victories over Calgary and U of A in the Canada West Final Four. And just like last year in Halifax, the number 2-seeded Thunderbirds faced a rude awakening by the number 7 seed and will now play for 5th instead. Like so many times in the past, UBC's strong play down the stretch was all for naught, having fallen behind early and unable to take control of the game against an Ontario squad that was chock full of senior players. Although Brock led 38-30 at halftime, the Thunderbirds pulled themselves back thanks to an 11-2 run to start the third quarter. They took a 41-40 lead at that point, but couldn't hold off Brock any further. The Badgers kept their composure thanks in part to their fifth-year guards Brad Roots and Scott Murray. Murray finished with 18 points and 4 assists, while Roots had 16 points and 7 assists. But the game hinged on the fourth quarter performance of fourth year forward Owen White, who scored 13 of his 22 points in the final stanza, including a pair of key free throws with 28 seconds remaining that ultimately put UBC out of it. Brent Malish led the way for the Thunderbirds with 18 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists. Following the loss, head coach Kevin Hansen was as resolved as ever, saying he and his players will continue to search for what they're doing wrong and just try again next year. And one positive note for the Birds is the fact that they won't lose any players to graduation this year, and therefore will have most of this year's team still intact for another run at national glory in 2009. All right, in other Thunderbird news, the UBC baseball team is in fine form as they get set for their home opener versus Oregon Tech tomorrow afternoon at Nat Bailey Stadium. After outscoring Corbin College 10-1 in their first two conference games of the season, the Birds kept things rolling last weekend against Concordia, putting up 43 runs in 4 games and improving their conference record to 5-0 to start the season. Mike Struna leads the club with a .370 batting average, including non-conference games. Ryan Pilgrim's 3 home runs puts him in a tie for the team lead with Scott Webster, while Pilgrim's .346 average is 3rd best on the team. Mark Hardy has been UBC's strongest presence on the mound so far this season, posting a 2-0 record in conference play with 26 strikeouts and just 7 hits allowed and 3 earned runs. All that in just 14 innings on the hill. Curtis Schumacher has been effective in relief this season for the Birds, posting a .64 ERA in 7 appearances. The Birds go up against a sputtering Oren Tek Owls squad this weekend, which is currently 2-13 overall and a league-worst 1-5 in NAIA Region 1 play. Game 1 of tomorrow's doubleheader begins at 12 noon, with Game 2 scheduled for 2:30 p.m. Sunday's conference game is at 11 a.m., while an exhibition tilt between the teams will follow again at 2:30. You can catch all of the action on the web at gothunderbirds.ca, and if you're interested in the recent history between these teams, it was UBC taking last year's season series, winning 5 out of the 8 meetings. Also happening this weekend in UBC Athletics, both the men's and women's track and field teams are in action today, hosting the Twilight Meet here at Point Grey. Both rowing teams will take part in a tri meet with Washington State and Gonzaga down in Pullman, Washington, tomorrow and Sunday. Men's rugby up in Kamloops, and both golf teams are heading down to Bakersfield, California to take on Cal State. You can find out more on all of these events at the UBC Athletics website, gothunderbirds.ca. And finally, a reminder that tonight on CITR 101.9 FM, we continue our coverage of the 63rd annual AAA Boys High School Basketball Provincials going on out at the PNE Agridome. The semifinals go tonight at 7 and 8:45 p.m. Game 1 features the White Rock Christian Academy Warriors taking on the R.C. Palmer Griffins from Richmond, while Game 2 sees the Yale Lions do battle with the Vancouver College Fighting Irish. And, of course, the winners of the games tonight, Katie, will move on to the championship game tomorrow night, which we'll have here on CITR Radio.
Thanks very much, Tyler, and good luck to all those high school boys playing in the championships. We wish you the best of luck, and nice to have you in the station live as always. We're going to cut to a PSA before we go to your weekend weather, but stay tuned. We'll have weather right after this.
Better environmentally sound transportation invites you and your organization to take the commuter challenge. BEST is a local non-profit charity dedicated to building healthy communities by promoting sustainable transportation. Year-round, BEST organizes events and programs that educate individuals on environmental issues and encourage viable solutions. In the first week of June this year, BEST run the commuter challenge. It's an event that encourages individuals to use cleaner modes of transportation for their commute to work and help improve air quality throughout Metro Vancouver. It's a fun competition between workplaces wherein employees utilize sustainable transportation options, such as cycling, walking, teleworking, taking transport, and car or van pooling. Last year, nearly 100 companies and over 40,000 people participated in the challenge. This year, we expect even more. Contact BEST at 604-669-2860 or CAM, at best.bc.ca for more information about signing up your faculty or organization in the 2008 Commuter Challenge. By making a small change, you can make a big difference.
And time to wrap things up on News 101. Before we go tonight, we're going to check in with our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, for a look at your weekend weather. Selena?
We're going to get a bit of everything this weekend. A few weak systems off the coast will bring in some variable weather. Saturday, cloudy with a few sunny breaks and a chance of showers, a high of 9 degrees. Sunday, we'll see a mix of sun and cloud with a few scattered showers and a high of 8. Into next week, we'll look mostly the same. That's your weekend weather, live from the top of Mount Seymour, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Thanks, Selena, for that on-the-spot weather forecast. And that's our program for March 14th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Katie Comley, and thank you for listening. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.